You'll have to excuse me. Let me further excuse myself by saying that I am 92, so you may well get better speeches this year, but I can make a bet you won't get many people older than I am. So, again, apologies for having switched from switched over to Zoom. It was chiefly because of my lack of technical ability. If I'd only seen a five-year-old walking outside, I'd have grabbed him and brought him inside, and he would have been able to tell me exactly what's going on. But when you're 92, he's a bit past you. So let's just forget about Zoom and talk about the Highland clearances. Well, those are us to talk. I didn't know whether to start talking about the clearances or the clan countries. The clearances took place from about the 1740s onwards. Scotland was a strange country. I know everybody thinks that different countries more or less draw boundary lines around separate peoples. But in fact, when you look at the map, a lot of countries have very little to do with who are the people who live there, and they have a lot more to do with how successful armies and dictators were in the past at grabbing territory. So Britain here, for centuries past, has had a dividing line between Berwick and Carlisle or Gretna Green. And on both sides of that line, the same language is spoken, more or less the same dress was worn, and the same kind of society was going. But if you go further north from that line, the Anglo-Scottish border, you get to another border, which is not a civic border at all, which isn't drawn on the map. It's the Highland Line. And this Highland Line divides what we now call the Lowlands from what we call the Highlands. There never was a Highland country. The Highlands were always completely separate, completely apart. They spoke a different language. They dressed differently. They had a completely different kind of society. So much so that a Lowlander going to the Highlands would often make his will first because he thought he was going to very strange, wild territory. And very few Lowlanders spoke Gaelic or Gallic, and very few Highlanders spoke English. So there was very little connection between them. I looked at the language some time ago, and there was far more connection between the Lowlands of Scotland and France, which is a long way the other side of England, than there was between the Lowlands and the Highlands. If you look at the Lowland language, there are 20 or 30 loan words in it from French. There are hardly any loan words in it from Gaelic. In fact, I can only think of two. One is brogue, which is a kind of shoe, and one is slogan, which is a kind of war cry. But apart from that, there was very little connection between the two. So how did the countries get together? It is all a question of how successful these various small countries, which grew up in what is now the island of Great Britain, over the centuries since the present people arrived there. The English and the Lowlanders, who are virtually the same people speaking English, came from the Low Countries and North Germany, from the southeast. The Gaels or Gallic people, the Highlanders, came from Ireland in the southwest. They didn't even come from the same place. So there hasn't ever been a real connected country between the two. They have always been hostile. Now, the lowlands gradually coalesced into a single country, stretching from the Anglo-Scottish border up through Edinburgh, then up the east coast, then the east bit of Caithness, then the Orkneys and the Shetlands, while the Highlands were obviously the mountainous area. The Lowlands became a single country, and of course you can run a country if it's fairly flat, which the Lowlands was, and there were plenty of hills. But the Highlands, it's always much more difficult to coalesce as a single country. I think Dr. Johnson said they can never conquer the Highlands because every fresh mountaintop is a fresh barrier. And that is why Switzerland, for example, stayed independent from all the bigger, stronger countries around it for a long time, because it was mountainous. The same with the Highlands. And instead of becoming one country, its political and social and economic system was the clan system, a group of people who were more or less related or thought they were related would be a certain clan, and they would settle in a particular area, a few square miles or a bit bigger, up to 100, 200 or 300 square miles. But they were separate. The way they lived was what academics calls hunter-gatherer lifestyles. A hunter-gatherer is somebody who lives off the wild country round him. And you can only have a hunter-gatherer lifestyle while there is a certain small proportion of people to area of land. You couldn't have much of a hunter-gatherer lifestyle in Golders Green or Walthamstow. It wouldn't be very easy. But in the Highlands, because there are not all that many people and there is a great area of Highlands, the Highlands were able to get their food and their requisites from the land in three separate ways. Firstly, they were hunters. Hunters, fishers, people who went out, shot the wild animals, hunted the wild animals, laid snares for them, captured them, shot them and ate them that way. Or they killed the game birds flying over them. Or they fished in the lochs and rivers of the Highlands, the salmon, the trout, and the fish just off the coast, as well as the fish in all the lochs, of which there are plenty in the Highlands. That was their main source of food. The second was herding. If your land is common, which it was, common to the whole clan, then you could put your animals, horses, cows, sheep or goats, onto the clan's land. And that is the main expense of keeping animals. Where are you going to let them graze? You let them graze on the common, and in due course you kill them and eat them, or you milk them, of course, in the case of, well, sheep and goats as well as cows. You made cheese and cream out of them, and you ate that way. The third way would be to till, to farm a little bit of land as it is in the way of agriculture, and they would grow a little bit of grain, a few what you might call elementary vegetables like cabbages, onions, leeks, and so on. And that was how they get their living. Whereas in the lowlands, just as in England, private property developed and then finally a capitalist society came, and that was capitalism there. But in the highlands, there was never this same kind of system at all. And when the lowlanders overthrew the highlands, which you might say they did from 1740s onwards, they kept saying, oh, the highland system was terrible. The chiefs, for example, were terrible dictators, bloodthirsty tyrants, and so on. Now, we know this is not true. At least if you're able to sit down and think your way through things, you know it's not true. I think many people reading history books leave their brains behind, because what they believe when they see history books always amazes me. Perhaps I'm in a slightly better way to say this, because having a one-track mind, I decided 50-odd years ago that I was interested in the Highland clearances, and I've been studying the Highland clearances ever since. And when I read a history book about the history of this country or that country or this period or that period, I can't say of my own knowledge, oh, that's rubbish, it can't be true. But I know this sounds swell-headed, I do know so much about the Highland clearances that I know that what they're saying is nonsense. Now, why do people write history books in which what they put down is rubbish? Well, let me give you an example. Whenever somebody produces a new history of the Highlands, or a book about
the Highlands,
So you could use the chat box, it says, in the white window in there, but I'll ignore it and go on. If you saw in a history book that William the Conqueror brought his Norman army over to invade England by jumbo jet, you would say rubbish. He didn't, because there weren't any jumbo jets. Or if you saw Drake was playing bowls on Plymouth Hoe, when he heard that the Spanish Armada was approaching on the radio, you'd say, no, he didn't hear it on the radio. There weren't any radios in the 1580s, so you know it's rubbish. But a lot of what you see in history, you can't immediately say it's nonsense. But if you study the subject, for example, let me give you an example. If I get a new book about history or about the Highlands or history of Scotland, I look through it, and the first thing I look for is, why are the Highlands empty? And the answer always is, oh, the Highlands are empty. They all had to emigrate or get out of the Highlands because there was a fantastic amount of overpopulation. They were overcrowded and they had to go. Now, I know that's right, that's wrong, because I took the trouble to go through all the parishes of Scotland, and there are 900 of them, I may say, to decide which parishes could be called the Highlands and which could be called the Lowlands. Because if you're talking about the Highlands, the first thing I think we should do is decide where the Highlands are. I've read a professor saying, oh, the Highlands are so obvious you don't have to define them. Well, you do have to define them, because different people think they're in different areas. And I went through these parishes, parish by parish, all the documents I could find about each parish, and I decided that 162 parishes would be Highland parishes and the rest would be Lowland parishes. So having decided that, I then was able to count up the population figures in each parish. And I counted up the population figures in the 162 Highland parishes, which were given by an amateur enumerator in the 1750s. And I was able to count them up again in the 1790s when a further inquiry took place. And therefore, I was able to find out exactly if there was a population, overpopulation. And in fact, there was no overpopulation. In the 1750s, there were about 295,000 people there. In the 1790s, there were about 325,000 people there. And in fact, you can work it out. The Highlands were a big place. And I worked out that in the second half of the 18th century, the overpopulation consisted of one person in 350 acres. And if you have a country which finds one more person in every 350 acres and then more or less collapses from overpopulation, you don't believe it. Now, why do people put it down? There are people now writing histories of the Highlands, and they're all putting down there was overpopulation in the Highlands, 1700. Why do they put it down? And the answer is that's what all the previous people have put down. You can understand it in a way. I read history at college, and I was alongside people who were going to go in for an academic career. Well, here you get your first job as a research fellow, and at the end of the first year, at the end of the first year certainly, but probably the end of the first term, you have to go in front of all the other professors, and they say, what have you published? And it's no good saying to them, so, which is what I would have had to say, well, actually, in 50 years' time, I'm going to give the history of the Highlands, and it's going to be really thorough, and it's going to be absolutely... No, we don't want to hear what you're doing in 50 years. And it's no good saying, well, I've almost finished this book. No, what have you published? And if the poor research fellow says, I haven't published anything, you're out on your ear. And it's no good him saying, well, I've just got into a new house, got married, couple of small kids, I've got Tesco groceries to pay for and the rent or the mortgage payment. No, you're out on your ear. So you have to, in a way, you're forced to take what your elders have said, especially if among the professors facing you on the other side of the table and questioning you are people who've just written histories of the Highlands. You're going to be very brave if you stare them in the eye and say, I'm sorry, but you've got it all wrong. You're going to be very brave to do that. Dr. Johnson, I think it was, yes, I'm sure it was, who said, well, of course, if you simply copy from what has already been written, anybody could get his book finished very quickly. And that's exactly what happens. You look in the history book, there was a big population explosion. Oh, that was the Earl of somebody or other who's in the government who wrote to me, claiming there was a population explosion. Never mind an overpopulation. It was an explosion. This one person in every 350 acres was an explosion. I hope he knew. And if it's all in the book, you simply copy it. There are half a dozen other things in which people simply copy what was in the book before them. And again, I looked through it and I groan as I looked through. Most Highlanders were Catholics, I read. And I groan. I know lots of other historians have said most Highlanders were Catholics because the historians are Lowlanders. There are very few Highland Gaelic historians. And they are talking down the Highlanders, and the Catholics are always by way of being the baddies in English and Scottish history. So we'll put all the Highlanders were Catholics. Yes, until I come along and I go through every of the 162 Highland parishes and find out how many Protestants there were and how many Catholics, and then add them up in long columns, 162 entries in each column. And there were 96% of the Highlanders were Protestant, 4% were Catholics. And yet, the number of books I could show you almost here and there, and all the Highlanders were Catholics. And that's why they were always so obnoxious to our Protestant ruler in Edinburgh and so on. Rubbish. He simply copied it down. He hasn't had the time, I suppose, if he's a poor research fellow, desperately trying to get something published quickly. He hasn't had time. And then all these things come up time and time again, and I groan to myself. For example, all the old Highlanders drank vast quantities of whiskey. The number of times I've seen that, people have seen the Highland distillers whiskey adverts with old Highlanders drinking themselves to death, and they think, oh, that must be true. So they all drank. You go back. There were, even though the Highlands were a foreign country, there were enough people who did go up there, enough venturesome travellers, or, for example, people on the religious business, either Catholics or Protestants, who were going up to try and convert people, that kind of thing. And they used to write a report afterwards, or write the story of their travels. And from them, you can see what the Highlanders drank. The Highlanders were notable for drinking water. That's what the Highlanders drank. Or for a special party, they would drink whey, W-H-E-Y. I don't know if you've ever tried it, but the Highlanders milked their cows and they made cheese out of the milk. And their cheese, it was a big thing, very healthy for them, and so forth. And you make cheese out of the curds of the milk, and what you've got left after you take the curds out is whey, which is a kind of watery milk. So as a special treat, they drank whey, W-H-E-Y, but normally they drank water. And yet, over and over again, the Highlanders all drank gallons of whiskey every day. They didn't, just a load of rubbish. But I see it in every book. Well, not every book, but I don't see all these errors in every book, but at least a few of them in every Highland book I see. Then again, I see those who carry out the clearances were English. And you feel, oh, yes, I bet this chap is a member of the Scottish National Party or something, because there weren't any English. The clearances were carried out by the Highland chiefs who became landlords in about the 1750s. And they were the people who carried out the clearances over and over again. You might find the odd lowlander who bought an estate in 1850 was carrying out some clearances. By and large, the clearances were carried out by the clan chiefs. Mind you, I'm telling you this, but don't believe me. When I first began, I very venturesomely found out all the present descendants that I could of the Highland chiefs who were there between 1750 and 1880, roughly the period of the clearances. And I thought, out of curiosity, I'll just see what kind of answer I get. I wrote to them all very politely. I didn't write and say, your bloody great-grandfather's an absolute bastard. No, no, I thought, I'm not going to get an answer. So I wrote very politely, I am interested in the history of the Highland Clearances. I'm thinking of writing a book about them. I wondered if you could give me any help as to your little section of the Highlands. They all wrote back. I was amazed. Why they all wrote back, I can't think. I suppose they thought I was going to write about them. But for a time, I was only opening letters with coronets on the back, you know. A particularly extraordinary position for a socialist to be in. But virtually, I think one or two who's, I think the Countess of Sutherland, as she was, and she just died, I think she wrote back to say, she didn't actually deny them because even she wasn't able, they're so well known that she wasn't able to deny it, but said, more or less, I warn you, a lot of good historians are working in the same field, and if you get it wrong, they'll chew you up. She didn't say quite those words, but that's what she meant. But virtually all the others I've got here in my papers here, all the returns I got, all the return letters I got, and virtually none of them, all of them could assure me that clearances, there may have been clearances in other areas, but there were no clearances here. In fact, in the end, after reading a good few of these letters, I began to decide that the only people who had, the only areas that had clearances were other areas, if we could only find out where the other areas were. But and if you read in the history books, the historians, let me see, I went to several of these important people wrote back and invited me to go and see them, more or less, or at least to drop in. And their librarians. And I remember the Duke of Argyll kindly wrote back, oh, we had quite a back and forward correspondence to the Duke of Argyll, claiming stronger each time he wrote that there were no clearances in the Highlands, in his area of the Highlands. Finally, you know, he said, come and I'll show you. You can look at my documents and I'll show you. And I went up there and sat by invitation, went and looked at his library, went and sat in the library chair. And there were a number of letters open, so you couldn't help but read them, from well-known historians, all of them on first-name terms, with the Duke of Argyll, dear Ian, and ending up yours, I, A-Y-E, which is Scott for yours forever kind of thing. And it was a temptation to think that if I'd been able to go along with what they all assure me, I could have gone along bragging about my friend, the Duke of Argyll, I suppose. But there it is. None of them had any clearances. And yet, I've in the case of Argyll, I must have written many thousands of words about the Campbell clearances in Argyllshire. However, there weren't any. Then what else did they say in virtually every history book? Oh, the Highlanders were crofters. Let's just get this straight. If you're talking about crofters, you're talking about after the clearances. You're not talking about before the clearances. Nobody in his right mind would agree to be a crofter. A crofter is a Highlander who has no ability to get to any proper kind of good land, and who, rather than being thrown out to go down to the Glasgow slums or the backwoods of Canada or America, accepts a small bit of very barren, very poor wasteland that the landlord cannot get anybody else to give any rent for. That's a crofter. Now, the idea that there were crofters before the clearance is ludicrous. And yet I said, just the other day I saw somebody, some marquis or anything, the civil wars in the middle of the 16th century, he was caught by crofters in 1550. I don't know what they were doing. They missed their century by about two and a half centuries. But there it is. Other historians who call them crofters, so we call them crofters. I haven't got any time to find out if they were crofters. I'm in a hurry. I've got to get this written. I'm applying for a new job. I want to be able to say, and I've written this book and that book and the other book, so I simply copy it. Along with the fact that if you're going to a new job at a big university, the people who are going to give you a job or not give you a job are the very people you have just accused of being no historians at all and getting it all wrong. Well, you're not going to get the job. You're wasting your time. So you'll either forget about being a historian and go to some other job, or you go along with what everybody else says and copy it down. Diviner said this. So Smelter said this. Lynch said this. Oh, well, it must be right. I mean, there we are. Tom Devine has now got knighted. So he's Sir Tom Devine. And the stuff that he's written, which is simply untrue, I've sent bits to him out of curiosity. What reply did I get? Nil. No reply at all. So when my books are published, I'll send him a free copy. And there, he's not only, you know, the biggest professor in Scottish history, he's got himself knighted. And when he had the knighting award, the Prime Minister came along to the celebrations. You know, this is the way to be a successful historian. Not the way to be a good historian. I'm a good historian, I would claim. But the way to be a successful historian is to put all this rubbish down. That is not true, because you're not prepared to spend the time. And I can understand this. I mean, I'm claiming here I've spent over half a century. Well, who's going to be balmy enough to do that? You know, if you went and asked the historian, they probably answered, he's round the bend, you know. He ought to give him the address of the local lunatic asylum. So, firstly, all these things appear time and time again in every book in the Highlands. The enormous population increase. The clearers were English. There weren't any. They were Highland chiefs. Most of the Highlands were Catholics, when 96% were Protestants. That means 4% were Catholic. Well, the difference between 4% and 100% is a long, long way. So how you can square it with your conscience to put down what is a load of rubbish, instead of going and finding out, the figures are there, the documents are there. When I lived in London, I used to, this is the old days before they changed the British Museum. I used to go for a long time every day to the British Museum and sit in the reading room of the British Museum. I don't know if any of you are old enough to have gone there before they changed it, but in the middle they had what was virtually a library of itself, and the library of itself of many, 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 many volumes was merely, these are the books we've got in the library. The British Museum has a lot of books, because if you publish a book, you've got to send a copy. Yes, I said a copy to the British Museum. You have to free. And I went through all these. Again, the historian would say, it must be balmy. I went through, I couldn't go through every page, but I did go through every page which had a Highland surname on it. A Cameron, a Monroe, a MacDonald, a Campbell, a Fraser, or whatever. And I went through all those, and anything that I thought looked reasonable, I asked them to bring it out to me. Lots of them hadn't anything to do with it, but lots I found absolute nuggets. Nobody has ever mentioned the Menzies clearances, or as the Highlanders say, Mingus clearances, because they're completely unknown. I found a book written by the chap who'd done them, and it's there in the British Museum, simply because I'd gone through all the books written by somebody called Menzies or Mingus. And there he gets a whole story of the Menzies clearances. They can't get around it. He was personally responsible for it. So that's what I did. And of course, I found a whole pile of stuff, which historians don't have time to know, I suppose. Yes, I said this again. I found you have to laugh. I mean, if you're not going to cry, you have to laugh. And the poor old Highlanders, we did them a good turn by clearing them all out. Why? Because they were living in terrible conditions with their animals under the same roof. Nobody who's ever seen a Highland hut can ever have thought that the Highlanders were going to get all their animals under this roof. He had probably about 20 cows and calves, a whole flock of sheep. He had half a dozen horses, and he had goats as well. So how are you going to cram them in? But if you're writing orthodox history, you don't have to bother about the facts. You just copy down the Highlanders all had to have cattle under the same roof. And then, by a curious inversion of circumstance, the old Highlanders could never have got their great herds and flocks of animals under the roof of a railway station, never mind a hut. But as soon as the clearances were carried out and they were cleared off all the good land and given possibly an acre and a half of very poor area, very poor stony land, or very poor coastal land where the sea came over it with salt water every day. Nobody would give him any the landlord any money for it, and he had to make his living out of that. He had possibly one or two animals left. It was then after the clearances that he did have to live in a hut with the animals under the same roof. In other words, it was not only wrong, it was exactly 180 degrees wrong. It's extraordinary. And this, of course, is only, I don't know anything about any other kinds of history, apart from the Highland clearances. As I say, I'm only 92, I haven't had time to study anything else. I've got strong views about it, and I have my suspicions. But if all other historians are operating in the same way that historians of the Highlands operate, then there's very little you can believe in. Among all the other things, cattle under the same roof, vast quantities of whiskey or translated. Nobody's ever produced a single document, a single traveller, a single report. Whiskey was only mentioned in the Highlands getting on into the 18th century. The gentry drank brandy, as a matter of fact. Even the gentry drank whiskey. It only came in. And, of course, whiskey is the way you can forget the terrible things that have happened to you. You've been cleared out. You had all this marvellous land. Now you're down to a couple of acres of rotten land. You were prosperous. Now you're not. How can you avoid knowing about it? Take down a bottle of whiskey and you'll forget about it. You'll feel even worse the next day. But for tonight, you'll forget about it. So that's why you drink whiskey. There's absolutely no question. Whiskey is drunk to excess in places which have people who have sunk through the sunk in society, are in a bad way. And in the same way, these people who are drinking vast quantities of whiskey, I've seen this in the history book, at the same time, they believe that anybody whose tongue touched alcohol would go to hell forever and ever. So they're the same people. So how is tourism for you to believe that? But there is now a lot of extreme religion, of course. If you really want to find people whose religion really jars on you, go up, oh, I don't know, to the Outer Hebrides, where there are still Gaelic, still wee free Presbyterians who, for example, the ones who denounced from the pulpit some television programme that had shown Donald the Duck cartoons. And he saw two boys at the back sniggering. I said, you will not be sniggering in hell, boy. Now, that's extreme religion for you. But no, according to the history book, the same people who were drinking vast quantities of whiskey were also believed in it. Well, do they ever read the stuff? Honestly, the stuff I see in history books. For example, I find incredible. They have to have some excuse. The Lowlanders have to have some excuse. What happened to Highlanders? If you go up the Highlands, there's nobody there. What happened to them? You know, okay, where are they've gone? Ah, well, we had to clear that because the clan chiefs were dictators, terrible dictators. Professor Trevelyan, George Macaulay Trevelyan, no less, in his English social history, talks about the clan. Why he brings it into English social history, I've no idea. He's Scottish, he's Highland social history. Anyway, he brought it in and he said they were so bad that anybody who said a crossword was imprisoned in fetid dungeons. Fetid meaning rank, nasty, smelly. Well, I suppose it's better. It's even worse than being imprisoned in sweet-smelling dungeons, I suppose. But anybody who writes that doesn't know any history. I'm sorry, Professor Trevelyan. You're now dead, so I can only apologise to your coffin. But the vast number of clan chiefs lived in a hut, slightly bigger perhaps than the hut of most of the clansmen. But the idea that he had dungeons to throw, and furthermore, that there was anybody to throw these people into dungeons. He didn't have any police. He didn't have any soldiers. He didn't have any courts. He didn't have any judges. He didn't have any lawyers. He didn't have any prison warders. He didn't have any torturers. Now, if you've gone out the Lowlands, they had some very good torturers out on the Lowlands. Charles II, there was a plot to kill Charles II, and the English courts sent the suspected people up to Scotland because the Scottish torturers were so good that they would get confessions out of anybody. This actually happened. In fact, the Scots Lowlanders were always very good. It was a Scottish believe it or not, it was a Scottish bishop who invented thumb screws. That's the way to do your interviews.
Comrade Edgar, you've been going for nearly an hour. Could I ask you to wind up so that people can ask questions, please?
Let me see. Wind up. Well, there it is. Clearances came along for reasons I'll give you afterwards, if anybody is curious enough, after about 1746, the Battle of Culloden, and went on until about 1880-odd, when they passed laws to give a certain kind of certainty of tenure to crofters. Okay, that's it.